technical, something. Too much something. See, at home, they don't let me do that. I'm instructed to leave it alone. So when I go away, I do the same thing. I looked at it and I thought, well, I wonder if that's turned on. See, that's how much I know. Not much. So you wonder why I'm up here, maybe. He doesn't know anything about this, so what does he know about? So it's kind of a question, I understand. I was asked as an assignment to share with you this morning on the qualifications of a minister. What is your closing time here? 1 o'clock? Really? You mean that? You serious? When I finish? Dangerous. My wife didn't hear that, I hope. There are a couple of things that I would like to somehow get through to you on. I'm not sure if that's the right wording, but to perhaps impress upon you the seriousness of what you're about to do and what you're planning to do in a couple of weeks. Even though I've done this lots of times, and I know people, I think people get tired of hearing this sometimes, but 51 years does not seem to make us an expert, does not make me an expert, although some people think that after all those years you should know. And we know some things, but we don't know it all. And I don't have all the answers to everything. Another thing that I would like to impress upon you this morning, if I could, is that who's in charge? Now, I could probably impress upon you one thing, say that it may come through to you that I'm the one in charge, but I want you to know that I'm not. It's not me. And it won't be your overseer either. It's Jesus Christ. And that's, I really want to make that clear to you, that Jesus said in Matthew 16, he's very clear, the conversation was going on between him, Jesus, and some of the others. And he did something that a lot of us do. Well, what do you think? What's your thoughts? And if I would ask you, well, who do you think I am? That would be kind of an arrogant way for me to approach it, but that's what he did. He was God, so he could do that. He asked them, well, who do you say? And there was obviously a debate there as to what was happening. Of course, different ones had different ideas who he was. And of all people, it was Peter who finally said, well, you're the Christ, Son of the living God. And that impresses me. I love that statement. And then his answer to that was, you said right. That's true. And he goes on to say there about how he's going to build his church. And this, I just really want to emphasize, he said this, I will build my church. All right? So, and you, the singers this morning sang that, build your church. I thought that was so beautiful that it's part of what I wanted to say in the introduction, is how that Jesus made that statement that he's building the church. Now, you may think you're building the church, and you may be a very internal part of this, and you should be. In fact, you are the key people that will do the that make the voice. You are the ones that will be calling someone. I just believe that we don't quite get it. Because there are a lot of men who have been called that haven't made it. And there's so much residue that falls away or comes out of this that people at this point even are skeptical about calling men into leadership. In fact, I faced that not long ago. Was in an area where I was asked to go and was a one pastor type leadership. He had a board of two men, and he was wanting to ordain. And so I went there to discuss this with them, and his leadership team looked at me and said, "Why do we need to do this? What's wrong with what we're doing? We're fine. We got it. It's under control." And that I wasn't prepared for that. It really took me back a step, and I got real nervous, and I didn't know what to say, and I was really struggling with it because I didn't know these men. It had been my first time that I had met them. I didn't know who they were. I didn't know anything about them except knew their name. That's about it. And then they pumped me with that, and I'm like, I don't know what. And I told this one brother, I said, I really don't know how to answer you because you kind of got me. But at that point, it came to me. I said, well, it's biblical. And we're called as a church to do that. And I said, it seems to me that perhaps you're not ready for this. I suggest that you as a team pray about this, talk about it, and I'll just back out of it. I'll let you guys figure it out. With less than a year, I got a phone call saying, we want to ordain. And it was a real journey. I won't bother you with it. I won't bore you with the thing. But it ended up they ordained two men instead of one, and it was a unanimous decision by the church in the end, and it was very good. Another thing is I would say do not set things up. Don't tell God how to do this. They did, and it caused a lot of, we had a real struggle working through that because they had, I'll just say this, they had fasted for 2 weeks, prayed about it for 2 weeks, and their decision was, there will be no lot. There will be unanimous decision, a unanimous voice. All this they had it outlined. Well, guess what happened? Their bushel of apples got dumped, and they rolled all over the place. And I had to fix it. Who was in charge? Well, it sounds like I was, but honestly, I will say that it was God who helped us get that worked out, and it ended up that it worked out okay. And there were two men that were ordained, and it worked fine. So, there are things. I would just caution anybody in any group, any church, do not set up a precedent and say, we're going to do it such and such. Because there are many ways in which things can happen. And there are different ways that you do this, depending on where you're at. If you go up north, Pennsylvania, those churches are close together. They don't, they spread it out over weeks of time. They have, one Sunday they'll do qualifications, and then maybe next Sunday they'll do, they'll call a person to be interviewed or persons, and then the next Sunday they'll ordain. Well, they're close by. They can do that. Well, you live in the South, it doesn't work as easy. My closest church that I oversee is 5 hours from me. So it's difficult to do that. It becomes expensive, actually, to do it like that. So that's one reason why we kind of make a weekend out of it and we do it like that. I don't know what you're expecting to hear, but I'm going to be taking some time, and I will not cover the entire scope of qualifications this morning because you would be late for lunch, and you would probably have a burnt roast. So I'll spare you of that. I'll save you. Thank you, brother. I will try to give you time to be able to make lunch and get it on time. So that part, well, I'll commit myself to that. Because it is a difficult and it is a large scope to cover, but I do want to cover a few things. A couple of things that I think about is that there are men in this audience that probably already feel a pressure. There's probably some of you here this morning that would just as soon not be here. You would probably rather go somewhere else today because you really don't want to hear what I've got to say. I can attest to this fact, and I haven't picked it up here this morning yet. I do body language. I watch. I carefully observe. So I'll warn you ahead of time. So you can sit any way you want to sit. You can look any way you want to look. You can cover anything you want to cover, and it won't bother me a bit. If you want to close your eyes and take a nap, you help yourself. If I'm that interesting that you would dare take a nap, it's okay. I won't bother you a bit. But I do find that I have in the past, as I give this kind of information, it's a lot of times extremely obvious how someone just sort of stands out from everything, or two, or someone. Honestly, I'm going to tell you a little secret. Before Tommy was ordained as a deacon, I was here, and I don't know what I was preaching about. But when I left that day, in my heart, I said to myself, "That's the man." Who's your deacon? Does that give me qualification? No, it does not. Please do not think that I'm up here identifying you because I am not. And I will not. I refuse. In my entire life, I cannot remember ever voting for anything in church administration. After I became an administrator, I absolutely left it up to the church. I believe that God's church is so important to Him that He wants to use you. He wants to speak through you, not through me. He wants to speak through you who He wants to be in part of this leadership team. And I'm supposed to be submissive to that and accept that as an administrator and as a leader. Now, you may not agree with that, and I will probably say a lot of things. And you may say, "Oh, man, that guy's, there's something wrong with him." Well, it probably is. I mean, it normally is. But we can't help that. We're still who we are, and we're going to do what we do. And that's how it is. So there's that picture. And I haven't identified anybody, and I'm not trying to, but I think the Holy Ghost sometimes is involved in this mess. That didn't sound right, I know, but He is involved because that's His work. This is what He does, people. And I've had people come to me and say, "Well, I gave such and such a name, or I gave a name, and that name never came up." Well, okay. So what do you want me to do about it? I mean, I can't help that. You know, we don't go by, years ago it was like this: if you had one name, if you had one vote, you'd be in the lot. I'll never forget, I went to an ordination one time years ago. There were seven men on the front pew. Out of those seven men, I knew every one of them. I knew them well. Out of those seven men, there was only one man in that group that didn't use alcohol or tobacco. One man. And I'm thinking, I'm sitting there, and I had an expert with me, David Showalter. I don't know if you knew him or not. He's a great old prophet that I used to love. He's gone to be with the Lord now, but he was at my church for revival meetings, and he and I were there, and I didn't say anything at the time, and the man that was chosen, I'm like, "Oh my goodness." And I was young. I didn't know what this is all about. I didn't know how this stuff worked. But I was really struggling, frustrated that how this came about. The man, the cleanest man there, was not chosen. Kind of like, you know, who am I to make this decision? And I asked David on the way home, I said, "David, tell me, how does this work?" And he said, "Sometimes God pulls the worst of the bunch if you tempt Him that bad." And this is exactly what happened. I don't want to, the man is on his reward. Now, he's gone, and I'm not trying to dig him up. But I will say this, that man struggled worse than I've ever seen anything. It was terrible. All right, now say this. When your calling does not match your service, things don't work out too well. They just don't work. So I'm putting a lot of pressure on those of you that are going to be doing the voicing. And you say, well, I don't have a name. Well, nobody is saying you have to have a name. But if you have a name, we'll be looking at you to give it to us in a couple of weeks. So you should be at the present time, you should really be searching and praying about it. And I think of the statement that Jesus said that many are called. So there's a lot of you in here that could feel pressure. And you don't know why. You may be all nervous and tight and up tense, and you're thinking, oh man, I don't want to do this. Well, let me tell you what happens when you become a minister. Ministry is very difficult. It is. It's very difficult. It goes against everything that I'm supposed to be that God wants me to be. It really is. And when I get done with this, you'll probably say, I'm leaving, I'm not going to take part in this. Don't do that. Because it requires submission, sacrifice, suffering loss, giving up a self. If you don't believe what I'm telling you, meet with my wife after church and she'll tell you. She'll verify. I've drug her all over the United States doing things for God. She seems to enjoy it. At least she got me convinced she does. Whether she does or not, she hadn't told me. No, I think she does. It's a very difficult life sometimes. It has the potential to make you go home and not sleep, which I don't do very rarely. I'll be honest with you. I used to take it home with me, and it would crawl into bed with me, and I couldn't sleep, and I about had a nervous breakdown. And finally, I thought, well, this is ridiculous. Who am I trying to fool anyhow? It's not my work. When I get done with what I'm doing, I'm going home, and I go to bed, and I go to sleep. I know not all ministers can do that, and I don't know, maybe I'm just not right. But that's the way it is. And I don't take it home with me. When there's crisis intervention, I do a lot of it. I'm on the road constantly, going places and helping pastors work through some of the difficulties that pastors have. And these are the list of things that I've come up with. It's not in the Bible necessarily, but it is a biblical premise that you will do those things. So you're saying to yourself, my name's out. I ain't going. So don't call my name. Who's in charge? Remember? Who's building this church? Anyhow, are you building this church? Are you letting Tommy do it? If you are, it's already a mess, so just don't even bother. If you think Jerry's going to do it, I can assure you that he can't do it because I've been around him too long, and Elvin's leaving. So we're kind of up a creek on that one. There's going to have to be someone else. There's going to have to be someone that's going to help us figure this out. Who is he going to be? Jesus, that's who. He said, I'm going to build my church, and I want you to know that to me is a very serious thing. You know, I'm so blessed. It's such a blessing to just know that God's presence is where? It's always everywhere, wherever you are, that's where he is. He follows you around, and you ignore him, and he goes with you, and you just don't pay any attention to him, and he's still right there, just following you around. The Holy Ghost is always where you go. It's there. So many are called, few are chosen. That creates a problem. Man, I think I should be the one. That's the other thing. Pride gets in the way. Arrogance. I'm supposed to be the guy. Wait a minute. We just went through that not long ago. I'm supposed to be the one. Oh, the church, I can't trust the church. Churches, they're not to be trusted. They don't know what they're talking about. Wait a minute. Isn't that a pretty serious allegation against Jesus? Jesus said, I will build my church. In Acts 20, verse 28, he said this, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock, he's talking to the leaders now, over which the Holy Ghost has made you overseers. Who am I? Who am I to say that's not right? Then he said, to feed the church of God, which he hath purchased with his own blood. And he goes right on down the list there, and he tells us of all the things that could happen and will happen, and why you're supposed to be so careful and be on watch. So that's why we're careful then when we go through the selection process. There will be an interview. We do a lengthy interview, large interviews. Then it's the whole picture then, or the typical thing is to find out who is qualified and who is and who can be there. And then, so then you have the two things that come out of this is, how are you going to select? What are you going to look for? Well, I think of the story of Samuel and Eli. You know, Samuel became a priest. He was a priest, wasn't he? Yeah. Anyhow, he anointed Saul, and he was afraid of Saul. But God was telling him that he needs to go down to Bethlehem, I think it was. And there's a man down there, his name is Jesse, and he's got all these boys. I love this story. He's got all these boys, and I want you to go down there, and what did Samuel say? No. He argues with God, and he says, look, if I go down there and Saul finds out, he'll kill me. That's one thing I've never been afraid about, is come here. I don't think anybody, if you kill me, I'm advanced and you're lost, whatever. But Samuel was afraid that Saul was going to kill him if he goes down there and does, because he's supposed to pick a king. And Samuel said, no, I don't think I want to do this. I think this is too dangerous for me. You ever been in a dangerous spot? She was just the other day, dealing with that woman. You didn't know what's going to happen. You didn't know, but I appreciate the testimony. So Samuel says, I don't know about it. So God says, well, I'll tell you what you do. You take a heifer or a bull or something, take some animals with you, and you go down there and you make a peace offering sacrifice. Samuel thinks, well, hey, that's a good idea. We'll do that. They won't know what I'm there for. So he goes down there with his stuff, and he shows up and says, what do you want? He said, well, I want to make sacrifice. So he does this, and somehow, and I don't understand how it all came about, but somehow, in the process of time, he said, actually, I'm here. Where's your boys? You got a large family. And Jesse said, yeah, I got boys. And he said, well, let me see them. And so the first one comes out. He says, that's it. That's it. You know why he said that? He liked him. He liked the way he looked. He liked probably the way he smelled, maybe. I don't know. Whatever. And he liked all about him. You ever do that? You're going to select someone out of this group because you like them? Sorry. The Holy Ghost don't approve of that. He don't go with that. So he got stopped. God said, no, that's not the man. So he on down the line. Every person, every boy that came out, nope. Didn't look right. Didn't none went right. So finally, Samuel's confused, and he said, something wrong here. Something wrong. He looks at Jesse and says, you have any more boys? And Jesse said, well, yeah. I got this little guy out here to take care of the sheep. He's just a little guy. He's not much. He's just sheep, taking care of the sheep. That's all he's doing. Not much. Samuel says, go get him. Bring him in here. He said, well, he's ruddy. You know, can you picture some little guy out there in the field? He's ruddy. I don't know what that means. I don't know how ruddy people look. I'm not sure how to describe that, but he did. And so he's like, bring him in. Go get him. Send for him. Remember that word, send for him. Is God sending for you? Somebody in here? God sending? All right. So then they bring this little frazzled guy in. He's none but a little whatever. And Samuel says, that's him. That's him. That's the one. And he takes his horn of oil and anoints him. And he's just a little boy. And he's already anointed king of Judah, I think it was. Right? Girls, you ladies had a class on that today, I believe. All right. So, what does that say? Does it mean then that I should be careful? You see, you think us preachers are the, you know, we're the keynote people, but I can tell you we're not. I can assure you we're not. We're just, you know what we are? We're servants. We're servants. We serve you. That's it. We're servants of God. God has called him in his kingdom, and that's what we're looking for another servant. For that, you should be a servant regardless, but you as a church have a huge responsibility in selection process. Well, let me go to 1 Timothy 3. I'm going to have to go through this. I'm just going to read it and make some deductions. Because there's a couple more things that are high on my list when it comes to calling a minister. And in this case, that's where we're at. Let me read it. Now, I'm going to read from the King James. If you have another translation or version, you may... It probably reads different. It may use the word overseer, where I will use the word bishop, and I'm not, I understand all that. This is a true saying. It's kind of a normal saying. True saying means, I don't know what that all means, but a true saying would kind of imply that that's just how it is. That's just, you know, in church work, leadership, that kind of way it is. And we've all had our experiences with bishops. We've all had our ideas about bishops, and I've been one, and I can tell you, I didn't like it when I had that title, and I kind of got over it after a while. Then they took that away from me and gave me a word overseer, and I find out my workload didn't change. Everything stayed. I didn't change different. So I find out that it's all the same. Bishop, overseer, same word. No, not same word. Same work. Means the same. All right. So it's a true saying, if the man desires the office, any of you, don't put your hand up, want to be a bishop? That's a joke, isn't it? I bet I couldn't get you to put your hand up on that one if I'd hold a gun to your head. You want to be a bishop? No. Well, some of you have a desire. You're scared of it. You're afraid of it. You don't know what this means. You can talk to anybody that's in leadership, and you'll find out that most of them, not all of them, should have. There should be a desire somewhere. That's not wrong. So, if a man desires the office of bishop, he desires a good work. Well, we're not talking about bishop. We're not talking about lead pastor. We're not talking about all those things, but we are talking about what kind of a man you should be looking at. What should you be thinking about? Well, then he says, that person should be perfect. You go along with that? I lost my case there. Anybody here want a perfect bishop around here? I mean, you want a perfect bishop, don't you? Yeah. Tommy does. I got one guy. I want one brother on my side. It does. It says blameless. That's not perfect. But you know what? For some reason, we get it mixed up. We want a perfect leader. Well, if you can find one, let me know. In fact, after I read this, if you can find anybody in this church that is this good, I want to meet that person before I leave today. Okay? That deal? Let me read it. A bishop or overseer, leader, whatever you, lead pastor, it's the same work. Then must be blameless. Not perfect, but blameless, which means a lot of things. We'll talk about it later. The husband's one wife, and that's, we're going to talk about that. Vigilant, sober, good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach. These are high qualities. You look at someone that you can somewhat gather this in, but not perfect, all right? Don't go perfect, because if you go perfect, you won't have a name. See, that might be why some people don't have names. They're looking for somebody that's perfect, like Tommy here. Close. All right, not given to wine. Well, since we don't drink wine, what are we going to do with that one? What does wine do? Wine makes us how? Argumentative. So we're going to argue? He says, don't be a striker. Those two words. See, wine makes people, alcohol, let's put it this way. Alcohol makes people want to argue. They don't want to not argue. That's what they want to do. So he says, don't give to wine. But they did drink wine in those days. That was the way it was. But he said, be careful. Not too much wine. It doesn't work. Don't be a striker. Not greedy or filthy lucre. Which comes under the area of covetousness, you know, coveting. I won't go there, but you know what I mean. Patient. So, become a leader, you need to pray for patience. Well, if you do, let me know how you make out, because you will be in trouble sure enough. Don't pray for patience. Don't do that. Just be patient. He doesn't say pray for it. He says, you are to exercise patience. Don't be a brawler, and don't be covetous. Now, we've covered some of that. Then he says, one that rules well his own house. Now, I have a question for you. I hope somebody can answer this, because I'm too dumb to know. I just don't know this. Was Timothy married? Did he have a wife? Oh, you don't know. What do you think? She's not going to talk to me. Timothy have a wife? Huh? Come on, guys. I love this when I can put you up against something in a big pole and you can't get across it. I don't either. So relax. I don't know if he had a... I don't know. It doesn't say. Does it matter? All right. This is why I asked the question. Let's read on. One that rules well his house has children in subjection. Suspicious, aren't you? How does he do it? Well, you get a big stick. You have a stick around. And then if they don't listen, use a stick. Does it say that? You know what? I have this book. I was going to say it in the beginning. I have this book I use for leadership. And it's full of good information. I mean, it's really, the author, it's just above reproach. It really is. I use it a lot. In fact, I brought it with me. This book. I use that book. And he said, you do it with gravity, not with a stick. Oh, but it says that if you spare the rod, you spoil the child. Easy on that one. We're not going there, but easy on it. You know, there are churches, there are groups, that if your children are not in command, as they feel, they'll excommunicate you and silence you as a pastor. I've seen it happen. So strange things in the world. All right, let's go on. Because, he said, if a man doesn't know how to rule his own house, how is he going to take care of the church of God? Now, he's actually talking about the lead person. I would say the person that we're looking for needs to be a team player. A team player, which is an extremely important part. Let me move on. All right, not a novice. Lest being lifted up with pride, you fall into the condemnation of the devil. Pride is a big thing in ministry. It's huge. It will destroy people. We need humility. God is always working, trying to make us humble, and we're always trying to be proud. And it doesn't work. They don't go together. The Bible tells me that if you humble yourself, God will lift you up. So take a risk. Go ahead and be humble. If you don't, He will help you. I'd rather do it on my terms, be humble, than on His terms. I like it better that way. Anyhow, we got to move on. Likewise, the deacons, now we're talking the same thing. Let me go on to verse 11, because I've got to get through this. I'm going to mess around. Our roast is going to get burnt. Verse 11, what does it say? Even what? Are you looking at it? Even what? So the wife. Whoa, wives, listen up now. You think you're not important to this operation? Jolene looked at me cross-eyed. I didn't like that. I didn't know she could do that. Even so, the wife. Ladies, I wish that I had the ability to convey to you how important you are in this whole process. If your husband is in any kind of administrative work, you, if your wife, is there something about this whole picture? He said, children and wives. Not just one wife, though. Not a whole bunch. Just one. Now, the reason that he's bringing that in, I believe, one wife, you know, we've made all kinds of deductions on that wife thing, trying to figure out what it is. I think, and I could be wrong, but I'll share it with you, that there was polygamy in these days. They had too many wives. They had more than one wife. I can imagine, no, I cannot, what it would be like if I had two or three wives with what I'm trying to deal with now. Hello? I cannot imagine having three wives in my motorhome traveling to Oregon. Thank you. I got a little support. Honey, look out. You're too close to the road. You're too close to the bank. Don't you run over the hill. Honey, I got it. Okay? I got it. Why you drive so close to the edge? Oh, sorry. I got it. Okay. Now that's humor. But I love that woman. She's been a good woman. 51 years in the ministry. I'm going to tell you something. That woman has been through some things. She has seen me come home with words like, I'm done. I'm through. I'm all done. I'm not going back. You ever heard them words? You ever heard them words? Diane's not looking. You've heard them words. I'm not going back. The wife, I can just hear it. Every one of these women, I hear it. I can hear exactly what you did. You're going back. You're going. That's what my wife said. You're not done. You're not over. You're going back. Okay. The same qualification that you're looking at for the man, you should look at for her. There is something that he puts in here for a reason, that even so the wife. You know what? I believe that's the fabric that makes us men successful. I could give you example upon example upon example of ministers who have not flourished, have not flourished. And I don't mean, is that may not sound right. You may think that I'm saying that I flourished. Have I? 8,000 miles, eight weeks on the road, that's flourishing. That wasn't flourishing to me. Traveling through the Rocky Mountains, that's not flourishing. Going across all the mountains out west and snow as deep as the motorhome, and driving beside it. We weren't driving through it, but it's snow that deep. And you think that's fun? I never in my life was so glad to come home to a sunshiny state. Oh, I said, why would anybody live here? But they do. And I'm glad they do, because we can't all live in South Carolina. That wouldn't work. But nevertheless, if that's flourishing, I can assure you that to me was not flourishing. There are times. But my wife was right there with me, encouraging me. She's not over there being obnoxious and arrogant and all that stuff. We were in Utah. Our motorhome tires were bad. I didn't know it. People, you think this is fun? Oh, it is fun. It's glorious. We're in Utah. The snow was 10 feet deep in the mountains, and we're down in the valley at a truck stop, and the guy comes out and says, "You better do something with your tires." And I said, "Why? What's wrong?" He said, "When you drove in here, they rolled." And I said, "Oh, no." So I went to a tire shop, and he looked at me and said, "They're not safe." I said, "Well, all I could think of was I had a son that had a blowout in a motorhome, and his daughter was driving, and he put it in the medium and destroyed the motorhome. She couldn't hold it. And that's all I could think and see. I'm in Utah. I'm not at home. I need 6 new tires on a motorhome. Flourishing? Yeah, it's flourishing all right. $6,000? That's pretty flourishing, isn't it? You want to know something? I want to tell you, God is good. When we left there, we had 6 brand new Michelin tires on that bus. This is a driver right here. He knows what I'm talking about. You want good rubber on that thing. You don't want anything that doesn't work. By the time we got home, the bill was paid. Now that's flourishing. You think ministry's tough? Yeah, it is. It can be. How about Jerry? It can be tough. But God makes a way. It's beautiful. Now, the wife has some qualifications as well. She's not to be slanderous, sober, and she's to be faithful. And there's a lot in there, and I must move along here. Titus, there's something in Titus that gives some of the same information. I'll just quickly do it. He said, "I left thee," he's talking to Titus, "I left thee in Crete so that you would set in order the things that are wanting, ordained elders," same word, same office, not same word, same office, in elders in every city, as I've appointed thee, and if any are blameless, not perfect, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of riot or unruly," and then the bishop says he must be blameless and the steward of God and so on, gives all the qualifications down through there. As I said, there's more here than I can know how to give you. But is it important? It is extremely important. And I've tried to give you some word picture of this, and I'm going to close with this. And this is not original with me. I got this out of an other book, not out of this book. If we set out to produce a race of leaders, what we shall succeed in doing is probably to produce a race of restless, ambitious, and discontented intellectuals. To tell a man he is called to be a leader is the best way of ensuring his spiritual ruin. Since in the Christian world, ambition is more deadly than any other sin, and if yielded to, makes a man unprofitable in the ministry. The most important thing today is the spiritual, rather than the intellectual quality of the indigenous Christians who are called to bear responsibility in the young church. And I would say the responsibility that lies upon you is big. And I hope that you will be serious about that in prayer. Now, please do not allow yourself to be fearful of this. It's the work of God. It is Jesus Christ who is building his church, not you and not me. However, we are his tools. We are his instruments whereby he uses us to build what he wants to build. Actually, I'm excited for you. I'm looking forward to come back in a couple of weeks and be with you and helping you with this process. Now, I'm not the lead person, so don't get any ideas about that. I'm here to serve, and I will be back to serve. Bob Webb will be in charge. He will be the lead guy, and I'm not sure how all this is going to work. But I do want to put another thought in your minds, something for you to think about. Sometimes we do it this way. Bob hasn't revealed to me yet what his plan is, but if it should be this way, it's something you need to think about, that we would take the voice of the congregation on Friday night after some introduction, addressing some things, giving out details of the procedures and so on. And on Saturday morning, we would do interviews, whether it's one, two, three, whatever. We would work with that. After the interviews are done, we sometimes ask the church to come back for 1 hour to let you meet the candidate or candidates, whoever they are, and then we would ask you for an affirmation to move ahead with those you have chosen. Then there would be nothing after that. The rest of the day, Saturday afternoon and evening, would be open. Then Sunday, we would have two sermons, most likely on Sunday morning, and I'm not sure about Sunday evening. It depends on how things turn out. It may be that if you have a lot and you have several that are in the process of this calling, then you would, of course, it would take a little more time. And so that depends on our leader, what he would choose to do. And we have not worked all those details out yet. That has been sort of the norm, the way I've described it, but it's not always the case. So we don't stereotype, but just to help you think about it, that in case that comes up, so you'll be ready for it, you'll be able to prepare your minds and heart, that if you approve, we would want you to approve that. And I would suggest that you let your pastors know where you are on that the process and the procedure of that. If you're okay with that, we would love to hear it, because it's new to a lot of places. It's not the way we used to do it. When I was ordained, it was speedily done. They voted Sunday morning. I was interviewed in the afternoon, ordained that night. They don't give you time to get nervous or think about it. It's just boom, 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 and it's over. Now you're over here, you go to work, and it's over with. You do what you're going to do. And so it's how it works. We've discovered that that's a little fast. Maybe we shouldn't do that quite that fast. And so we like for you as a church, I personally think that there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of tension during these times. You're already going to start feeling that. Some of you are going to feel it more than others. And so that's going to be in the picture, and I always like to consider that. And so then, after the voice is taken and you have affirmed the results of your voice, then you can relax and it's over with. But there'll be some that can't, of course, but that's, you know, we can work with that. We can make it happen. So God bless you. You've been a good audience this morning. I think I'm a little late, but not too much. So bless you good. I guess back to you, Ellen.